Good morning. So today, as most of you are probably aware, it's the last full day of our retreat together. And it's possible that some of you might have been noticing a range of different reactions to the fact that this retreat is coming towards its end. It's closer to over, but it's not over yet. So we have a very valuable 24 hours, more than 24 hours, to strengthen a particular quality that's extremely valuable, not only here on retreat, but in our daily life too. And as some of you can probably guess, that quality is equanimity. Equanimity being the capacity to maintain some degree of balance and ease, no matter what life brings us. And this is the freedom in freedom here and now. And I hope that our time together on retreat has given us a taste of it. And we taste it through recognizing the symptoms of clinging and resisting and learning ways to help that clinging and resisting to release. So just as we started this retreat with what I framed as a dana day, I'd like to frame today as an equanimity day. So just a bit more context then about what equanimity actually is. So in terms of the metaphor of the two wings to awakening, equanimity in some ways is the hinge point between them both, because it's both the culmination of our insight practice. So you might remember equanimity is the final factor of the seven factors of awakening. And it's also the culmination of our Brahma-Vihara practice. So it's the final one of the four heart qualities of kindness, compassion, joy, and then equanimity. So as a very simple definition to begin with, equanimity is the capacity of our hearts and minds to stay steady and balanced, even in the face of life's inevitable ups and downs, in the face of all of life's challenges. So recently I've been thinking of equanimity as a synonym for equanimity could be elasticity. Elasticity. So it's that quality of resilience, flexibility, adaptability that allows us to bend, not break, when things change. So this morning I'd like to explore equanimity a bit further because it is such a powerful resource as this retreat comes towards the end. It's a quality that we can consciously orient to help smooth out any ripples of reactivity as we start to contemplate leaving this sanctuary. So with the ending of retreat, we have the opportunity to notice some of our default patterns, how we tend to habitually relate to endings, because how we relate to endings on retreat is probably how we relate to them in daily life too. So some of us have the tendency to skip over endings and to jump right to the next thing that we think is going to make us happy. Metaphorically, the finish line of the retreat is in sight, and our attitude might be, oh, near enough is good enough. I've worked pretty hard. I can slack off now. And we might notice this energetic leaning forward, rushing, impatiently wishing that the retreat was over already. And for those people, often, they're already sitting in their favorite cafe with a good friend and a good cup of coffee. So if that's you, notice each time the mind jumps out. Notice that energetic rushing. And as I've been suggesting, physically stop. Take a moment to notice that tension in the body, in the mind. Invite it to soften, release. Remembering that there is still plenty of time for valuable insights to arise at any moment if you can stay present. For some other people, the default reaction is the opposite. They have the tendency to hold on tightly, to resist the ending for as long as possible. And for them, the finish line is in sight, and their attitude is, oh no, it's nearly over. I haven't got any of those insights they were talking about, or any of that bliss. I better work harder, slow down even more, stay in the silence and sit and walk and sit and walk and sit and walk. Maybe I should stay up late tonight. Or maybe I could ask the managers if I can stay an extra day, and then perhaps something special will happen. And I'll finally have something to impress my friends and family with. So still other people have the tendency to go into denial about endings and just not take them in at all. For them, the finish line is in sight, and their attitude is, oh, is the retreat finishing tomorrow? Well, I thought it was the day after. So what are we supposed to be doing again? Should I start packing now? No, that's on the schedule for tomorrow, but where did I leave my toothbrush again? And so the retreat end slips by in a blur of confusion, and suddenly they're back at home with friends and family or at work and wondering what just happened. So these are some of the common ways that we react to the ending of a retreat. And as you probably recognized, there are manifestations of those core afflictive energies of greed, of hatred, of delusion. And often we find ourselves flip-flopping between them all. It's not all bad, though, because at times every one of you here has experienced moments of equanimity. In fact, you wouldn't still be here if there wasn't already quite some depth of equanimity, of non-reactivity. I'm guessing that some of you had at least some moments of really wishing this retreat was over already, or maybe wondering if you should just call it quits and leave, but you didn't. And you might not have named it to yourself at the time as equanimity, but there was some capacity in your hearts and minds to stay with whatever that discomfort was back then, and to ride it out, knowing that it would change. So meeting that discomfort with kindness, compassion, courage, is what allows equanimity to strengthen and deepen. So equanimity is both an aspect of insight practice and it's a form of Brahmavihara. And for this morning, I'd like to focus more on the insight aspect of it. And it has a strong connection to wisdom. In fact, the Pali word that's usually translated as equanimity is upekkha. And upekkha literally means to look over, to be in a position to see the bigger picture, instead of just being caught in our own narrow viewpoint. And what helps us to see that bigger picture is our understanding of impermanence, of anicca, the truth that everything changes. Often though, as I've mentioned, we have a tendency to want to fix things, to fix the situation, to fix other people, to fix ourselves. And by fix here, I mean it in both senses of the word. Fix as in to mend or repair, but also to make fixed, static, unchanging. So when it comes to equanimity as a Brahmavihara practice, I understand that in the Tibetan tradition, unlike our tradition, it's actually equanimity that is seen as the foundation of the Brahmavihara practices, because it's what protects them from reactivity. And sometimes we can unconsciously misuse kindness and compassion as ways to try to get away from what's difficult or painful in ourselves or in others, instead of opening more fully to the challenging situation. And only after making space for it, finding an appropriate response. So just as a small, simple example of that, many years ago I was visiting my sister in London, and I was staying in the flat that she was sharing with a few friends. And one of these men had a pretty serious health condition that meant that he was often not able to work, and so he'd be home a lot during the day. And I was too, because I wasn't working, so we got talking, had some quite long conversations. And one day he told me in more detail what was happening for him, all of the painful and challenging symptoms of his illness. And I listened for a few minutes, and then I remembered having recently read somewhere that high doses of vitamin C were being used to treat that condition that he had. So I just asked him if he'd thought of trying vitamin C. Maybe you can guess his response. It stuck with me all these years because it was such a good learning. He just looked at me and he said something like, "I've had this condition for 15 years. I've been in chronic pain most of that time. Do you really think that I wouldn't have tried every possible bleep, bleep, bleep treatment that anyone ever dreamed up?" So, of course, I had to realize that what I'd thought was being kind and compassionate was actually just me not being able to be with my own discomfort at his painful situation. And because I didn't have any equanimity at that time, what I'd unconsciously done was just imposed my own reactivity on him in the name of being helpful and caring. So equanimity then depends on wisdom and patience and courage. The courage to be with what's difficult, to bear witness to it, to try not to react out of those unconscious patterns. And then in making space for our reactions to just be known and fully felt, out of that space, a more appropriate response can arise. So in the context of the suttas, one image that's used to convey this steadiness and stability of equanimity is the image of a mountain. A mountain remains unmoving, even as wind and rain and snowstorms might batter it. There's also the image of the sky that's unaffected by any of the changing weather conditions that pass through it. So here, too, on this retreat, we've seen a range of different weather. Sun, wind, rain, heat, cold. And if we want any of those conditions to stay the same, we'll suffer. So some of the traditional phrases that we use for cultivating equanimity highlight this truth of impermanence. So for example, Jack Kornfield says, "May I learn to see the arising and passing of all things with equanimity and balance." Sharon Salzburg, "May I be undisturbed by the comings and goings of events." Or Kamala Masters, "May I accept and open to how it is right now, because this is how it is right now." So as you hear these phrases, just notice any response. And in that last phrase from Kamala, you might notice how she says, "This is how it is right now." So she's pointing to the truth that everything changes. It's not just, okay, this is how it is, in a kind of defeated resignation, but this is how it is right now. And by implication, it will change. So in this next meditation session, we're going to continue developing the choiceless attention that we began yesterday, which in itself you could think of as a type of equanimity. And then I'll just occasionally bring in some phrases to help support that quality of openness, spaciousness, acceptance, and ease.